The history of math is our intellectual foundation to understanding science. Science, beautiful, awesome, wonderful science. It's the creative foundation to our ineffable future. Hi, I'm Gabrielle Burchak, and this is my podcast, Math, Science, History. In the year 415, the infamous philosopher and mathematician Hypatia of Alexandria, Egypt, was savagely murdered by church monks. This murder shocked the Roman community and its government leaders. Hypatia was known far and wide as a respected philosopher, mathematician, government advisor, and a professor. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, is a book that I wrote that looks not just at the circumstances surrounding her death, but also at the sum of her entire life. I weave in the details of her education, disciples, Neoplatonic philosophies, female contemporaries, and the many mathematics that she wrote and taught about. There is truly more to Hypatia's life than her death. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, written by me, Gabrielle Burchak, is now on sale on Amazon. Buy your copy today. The Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, located at CERN's European Organization for Nuclear Research, is just outside of Geneva, Switzerland. It is the world's largest particle accelerator, with a diameter of 5 miles. In its deep, enormous magnetic cave, operating with the highest energy of all particle accelerators, it pushes 2 high-energy particle beams at the speed of light, careening towards each other until they collide. This subatomic discharge, in its glory, produces valuable results that lead us forward to greater discoveries. The LHC is one of over 30,000 particle accelerators in the world today, with the first one created at California's University of Berkeley in 1929, which was only 5 inches in diameter. However, at one point, just a few hundred years ago, subatomic research was unheard of, as was atomic research. Enter John Dalton, English chemist, physicist, and meteorologist, the colorblind genius with a genuine Quaker heart who would usher the world into atomic research. John Dalton was born in Eaglesfield, England on September 6, 1766. His parents raised him as a Quaker with earnest values to live one's life not on a set of beliefs or utterances of God, but rather to exist as a testimony to the world. Even though his family was really frugal, he was fortunate to get an education from his father, who was a weaver, and from a fellow Quaker, John Fletcher, who ran a private school in the nearby village. At 15, Dalton moved to Kendal to join his brother in teaching at a Quaker school. However, Dalton was a Quaker, and as a Quaker, he was considered to be a dissenter. As a result, society barred him from attending English universities. Regardless, he was really curious, and he refused to accept the limits that society imposed on him. So, to continue to feed his wonder, he got an informal education from John Gough, a blind philosopher who was also gifted in the sciences. In 1787, Dalton began a meteorological diary, and from that day forward until the day he passed away, he entered over 200,000 weather expositions and observations into that diary. During his tenure in Kendal, Dalton discovered that he was colorblind after he sent what he thought was gray stockings to his mom for her birthday. When she got them, she was shocked. She wrote him saying that she could never wear the scarlet red stockings that he bought her. He asked his brother, who agreed with Dalton, yeah, they were gray. So thinking that his mom's eyesight was waning, he asked her to ask the neighbors what color they thought the stockings were. Well, her friends confirmed that, yes, they were indeed red, not very Quaker-like. So after realizing that he and his brother were colorblind, he delved extensively into the concept that he called colorblindness, which would eventually be termed Daltonism. In 1793, Manchester needed this determinedly curious and passionate teacher of so many subjects. So, New College in Manchester appointed him as a teacher of their academy in 1794. Also, the Manchester Literary and Philosophical Society elected him as a member, which actually became a turning point in his life because he started writing a lot of papers and reading them at the society. In 1800, as the university's financial situation began to decline, Dalton resigned and successfully transitioned into tutoring to supplement his income. He continued to research on colorblindness, meteorology, physics, and chemistry, and the same year that he left the college, his peers at the Manchester Literary and Philosophical Society named him secretary. The following year, he presented a series of four essays to the society that proposed valuable data and findings on the gases in the air. As though marking his claims on colorblindness and partial pressures wasn't enough, Dalton forged a notable path into atomic theory. On September 3, 1803, Dalton titled a page in his notebook, "Observations on the Ultimate Particles of Bodies and Their Combinations." Though now considered to be archaic, he proposed that the atom is the smallest part that takes place in chemical reactions. He then listed five circular scribbles with notations and atomic weights. These notations were the very first table of elements, which consisted of only five elements: hydrogen, oxygen, azote, also known as nitrogen, carbon, and sulfur. These five simple notations opened up a whole world of elemental calculations for future generations to discover. If you want to see these notations, you can visit my website at mathsciencehistory.com, and I'm going to provide some notations and some illustrations that he created, as well as some explanations behind some of his theories. So back to the story. A little over a month after his observations, on October 23, 1803, Dalton presented his essay on the absorption of gases by water. This essay concluded with his presentation of 21 simple and compound elements, all arranged by atomic mass. In 1808, Dalton published his first volume of work on the elements entitled A New System of Chemical Philosophy. In this, he presented a new set of data consisting of 20 elements. This data paved the way to elemental discovery and a process to categorize chemical structures. This new book was thorough and contained tables and tables of relevant and beneficial data, including 1, a table on elemental behavior under certain temperatures, 2, a table on the expansions of water, solids and gases, and of course 3, his most famous table of elements. In the final chapter of Chemical Philosophy, chapter 3, titled On Chemical Synthesis, Dalton presented a thoroughly precise explanation on the atomic structure and the building blocks of matter. In 1827, when he published his second volume of work, his list of elements increased to 36 elements. From 1832 to 1844, he received numerous honors and awards from universities and associations. As a Quaker, he wanted to dismiss the overwhelming accolades. But in 1832, he received an honorary doctorate of science from Oxford University. Adorned with a bright red robe, Dalton justified that wearing the traditional robe was acceptable since his colorblindness could not allow him to see the color red anyhow. In 1838, the Royal Manchester Institution erected a statue of Dalton. Despite his accolades and sincere admiration, Dalton remained true to his Quaker roots. He was humble, kind, altruistic, diligent, and hardworking. Still, with unrelenting disregard, age came to call for him, beckoning him to leave. True to his resilient nature, Dalton tried to ignore the request of age. With his last ounce of resourcefulness and intrigue, he entered a meteorological observation in his notebook on July 26, 1844. The next day, he took his last breath. There is no doubt that leading up to his last moment of life, he served science well, but he also served his friends well. He had many friends. He left a mark on the hearts of others with a constant reminder that each person has something valuable in the world to offer. His reverence for others was made evident by the outpouring of love and grief that followed his passing. At his civic funeral, the Annals of Manchester noted that over 40,000 people came from great distances to pay their respects to a man who served his life in the name of science. It is for John Dalton that we can see into the future. Traveling down the circular caverns of the LHC's giant vacuum, two thin beams of subatomic particles accelerate in opposite directions. Faster and faster they move, in a pipe sheathed with superconducting magnets, cooled in liquid helium at negative 271 degrees Celsius. Finally, they reach an adjoining pipe, moving at light speed toward a collision of discovery. The detectors, one as large as a five-story building, follows the millions of subatomic particles as if they are microscopic fireballs dancing in the night sky. The detector observes their behaviors, analyzing and looking closely for the most short-lived particles and measuring the longer-lived particles. This explosive display of subatomic fireworks is colorful and mesmerizing, momentous and thrilling, beautiful and ever so significant, as if they know that they are celebrating John Dalton, the man who brought us closer to these discoveries. I'm Gabrielle Burchak. This podcast has been brought to you by Caffeine, delicious, wonderful, nectar of the gods caffeine. Coffee, tea, coffee candy, you name it, I love it. Thank you for listening to Math Science History. If you like what you are listening to, please remember to subscribe and leave a review. I would really appreciate that. If you are interested in reading more about the history of math and science, please come visit me at mathsciencehistory.com. And while you are there, if you like what you're listening to, please feel free to click on that coffee button and buy me a cup of coffee. Until next week, carpe diem.